The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900CHML.
We are planning our financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Good morning, gentlemen. Good to see you on all on the weekend after the Super Bowl. You've obviously recovered. That's good to see.
Or yes, should I say the
Taylor Bowl? But we'll move on.
Well, I know some of the players got less airtime than Taylor Swift did. That's for sure.
Yeah. You know, how do you feel if you're just a poor old lineman?
But it was a great game. Any game that goes into overtime is a great game. So, good for Kansas City Chiefs. And I'm not sure, is there any news on if, the AFC or the NFC, which is supposed to be good for the markets, Mitch?
Well, Taylor Swift's in the AFC, so I'm going to guess AFC was good for the markets, considering she boosted the NFL by about $350 million. And the Super Bowl ratings was record highs. About 123 Absolutely. Million people average watching at that time. So I think it was good for a few people.
Yeah, and I think in general, she's boosted the whole economy and wherever she shows up to do a concert. So yeah, I'm going to go with that, Mitch.
Yeah, even Usher. He got the equivalent of about $53 million for that performance in value just from that spot.
Wow.
The Taylor effect continues. And you know what? It's who knows? But last week, interest rates did not drop as much in the U.S. as they had hoped. They had hoped 2.9%. They came in at 3.1%. Still, way off where they were a year ago, say 8%. But you know what? It just kind of says the U.S. really doesn't need the interest rate drops as much as the Canadians do. And they're not in a recession. The U.S. is doing quite well. Canada is actually hurting a little bit more. And it would, so it may mean that we have to go go alone on dropping interest rates down the road in order to help our economy, which would hurt our dollar. So, but I know, talking about interest rates, you're talking a little bit about mortgages today, Mitch.
Yeah. Hot topic all the time. It's the housing market. And I know a few of our analysts have, like you just said, that Canada is in a bit of a tougher spot than the U.S. And they've kind of pointed out that if there was going to be a recession in Canada, it would possibly be the housing sector that would cause it. And that would pretty much be because of the mortgages that were locked in or not locked in 2020, 2021. And ever since COVID, there's been a pretty sizable correction in the housing market. And that's really caused people to have a lot of stress on their mortgages and a lot on their monthly cash flow. You've seen a lot of the stock markets are actually hitting all-time highs right now. And so that does mean that the markets are recovering. You're seeing the U.S., you have the S&P, the Dow, they've both hit all-time highs recently. The TSX isn't quite there yet, which is the Toronto Stock Exchange in Canada, but it is slowly getting there. And the housing market does typically lag both sides. So when the market goes down, the housing market will typically go down a little bit slower. And when the market goes up, it'll also typically lag that as well. And most of the reason for that is the liquidity. It's going to take a little bit more time to sell a house than it will be to sell a stock. There's lots of houses now that take months to sell in terms of getting it to someone else. But if you're talking about a stock, you could sell it in a few seconds now with technology.
Yeah, definitely a buyer's market for the home side of things, a vast difference from where it was, say, 2 years ago. And so, yeah, but nice thing about stocks is they're always liquid. And you simply just hit the button and say sell, buy, and you can do that in milliseconds.
Yeah, gotta love technology, right? You weren't able to do that back in your day, right?
It's still my day, Mitch.
Oh, how quickly we forget that.
Yeah. Anyways, inflation's come down significantly. It used to be 8 to 9%, and now we're and that's why they rose interest rates so heavily. But now you're seeing inflation. The U.S. just recently said that it was 3.1%. Recently, they were expecting 2.9, but they got 3.1, which could mean that they'll keep interest rates a little higher for a little bit longer. Canada, as Don mentioned, said that they probably will lower interest rates a little bit more aggressively because they have to, just based off of the structure of mortgages, not being able to lock in for 25 years. For the US, they can. So the US kind of has an advantage in the terms of a housing market compared to the Canadian side. But you are also seeing fixed rates come down. And in the last 6 months, mortgage rates have gone from about 6.35% for a 5-year fixed rate to 5.5%, which is a pretty good amount change there just in the last 6 months. And that's even without rates coming down. And so you're seeing that because fixed mortgage rates are forward-looking. They are thinking, well, where are rates going and how can we remain competitive with our competitors compared to a variable rate? A 5-year variable 6 months ago was 6.8, and it's still about 6.8. So they're going to rely on interest rates being lowered by the Bank of Canada. And that just it just hasn't happened yet. They're hoping that it's going to happen this year, and they're very projecting that. And that's why you're seeing the fixed ones come down. But you're really not seeing that on the variable side yet. But to qualify for a mortgage, the stress test is about 7.85 to 8.8% just to qualify for a mortgage right now. So it's tough to even get the down payment for a house, but to qualify for the mortgage is also tough to do too. And you're looking at these mortgages and you're thinking, wow, well, the mortgage is such a high interest rate. Do I really want to buy? And it's not the worst thing to do right now because the overall house cost is also down as well. And it's hit that break-even point that, or even could be on the beneficial side, that instead of that $1.2 million house that really wasn't getting you something outstanding in many areas, that now it's down to nine to even $1 million. So you're not having to get as big of a debt and you're getting the same house, but you're getting it at a higher interest rate. And that does scare people off the sidelines. But now that they're protecting people to get lower interest rates, you're seeing some people jump off the sidelines and get into the housing market. So you will start seeing the housing market likely go up. That's obviously a forecast, but if people do have to foreclose their mortgages, it could go the other way. So Canada does have a little tightrope to walk compared to the US. But if we take an example here that you buy $1 million house and interest rates were between about if they were about 3%, you put 20% down and now you have $800,000 mortgage, your monthly payment's going to be $3,785 a month. And after 5 years, you're down to $683,000 remaining on your mortgage. And now if you look at current conditions, you buy a house at 20% cheaper at $800,000 and you put 20% down, $160,000. So you have a $640,000 mortgage at 5.6% interest. Your monthly payment is $3,906, and after that 5 years, you have $570,000 owing, which leaves you a huge difference between having that $640,000 mortgage and sorry, that $683,000 remaining and having $570,000 remaining. And now mortgage rates should likely be down at that point, and you're going to have a lower interest rate and a lower debt. So people who are afraid of the higher interest rate not necessarily should be, because you're going to have a much lower debt than you would have if you were to buy back then. But another thing people are asking about right now are variable mortgages. And I'm getting this a lot right now because they want to get the best bang for their buck. And everyone hearing that the variable rates are going to come down as the interest rates do. But it's also been a really scary word to even mention the last year up to 2 years. It's been very common that people opted into these during COVID, and it was a little bit greedy at the time because you're seeing people at fixed rate getting 2% and variable was 1.5 to 1.8, and they thought that was a great deal. But it's very common for people who opted that their monthly cost right now is actually double. It could be double in terms of their mortgage rate, as terms of their payment, or many variable rate holders have a mortgage with fixed payments. And as these interest rates rose, their mortgage payments stayed the same, but the amount of principal they paid each month decreased and the amount of interest paid went up. So some of these borrowers have seen their amortization stretch out to a point that their payments are almost interest only. Like, imagine having your monthly payment right now and it's just strictly interest. You have the same debt and your interest, the amount you're paying is not knocking it down at all. It's that's even worse. Like that you may as well be renting at that point. At least renting is not going to cost you as much, and you're not paying the bank. You're paying someone else that's paying down their mortgage.
Yeah, it's amazing how things have changed. You go from this like party going on where everybody was lining up to buy overpriced houses with low interest rates, and now it's actually a good time to look at buying. In fact, if you were looking to move up, like upscale your house, say you went from $1 million house to a $1.2 million house, it's a good opportunity because, since in the last year or so, both houses have dropped about 20%. Well, the $1.2 million house has dropped $240,000, where the $1 million house has dropped $200,000. So you're actually $40,000 ahead by saying, I'm going to buy a bigger house at this stage, which wasn't the case a couple of years ago. So definitely a bit of a buyer's market. And along with what you're saying, Mitch, the stress tests and everything else, it's a time to think about. If you're looking at saying, I want to upscale or get a bigger house, this now might be the time.
Yeah, and another good strategy that we've been seeing that we were suggesting about 6 months ago was actually to get into the housing market and to just get into a 2 year mortgage instead of locking into a five. And so if we take a $1 million house and you put 20% down and have that 800,000 in both of these scenarios for your mortgage, one strategy people should consider, like I said, was taking that 2 year fixed rate. And they're going to be higher than a 5 year fixed rate. But after that 2 years, if you lock into that, you're going to get a much lower rate just based off of that the fixed year rates are going down right now. So this strategy is looking better all the time. Interest rates are expected to go down soon. You've already seen the last 6 months go from 6.35 to 5.5 for a 5 year fixed rate. So if you were to lock into an $800,000 mortgage 6 months ago at 6.35, versus locking into a 5.5 interest rate, $800,000 right now, the monthly cost difference is $357 a month, which is about $4,300 a year. And over those 5 years, that's $21,420 just by having that 0.85 difference in your interest rate. So this is why we haven't been suggesting locking into a 5 year fixed right now. It just isn't the time to do so. And with the proper advice, you're going to save thousands. Clearly, if you just waited about 6 months, it'd be about 21,000 in savings. So people who are sitting on the sidelines, being patient are kind of paying off right now because they're not locking into that rate. But the example that I wanted to mention was locking in for 2 years instead of five. So if you lock in for 5 years at 5.5%, and in 5 years your mortgage of 800,000 is worth at the end, 718,000. Example two, you lock in for 2 years at 6.19, and then you lock into a 3 year at 4.5%, which is not unreasonable to think we'd get there. They're expecting 100 basis points reduction for the second half of 2024 and 100 basis points sometime in 2025. So that'd be about 2% lower. So we could see a 3 year fixed rate get to 4.5%. I don't think that's unreasonable. And so if you do that for 2 years at 6.19 and you do 3 years at 4.5, the balance of your mortgage will actually be 711,000. So just from having some strategic planning in your mortgage right there, the same mortgage start. So right now, it would be about $7,000 in difference just by having some mortgage planning, which hasn't been exactly something common to plan for up until COVID when rates went dramatically down, and then post-COVID rates go dramatically up. It was pretty standard that, okay, well, here are the rates, and where you can go 5 year or you can go short term, you can go variable, you can go fixed. It wasn't necessarily too much strategy going in there.
And you know what? It's interesting. We talk about money in general, mortgage rates and payments. And we always, people are not really looking at the big picture when they're buying houses during this COVID era. It was purely emotional. And there's a competition to buy a house. So you had to just go in sight unseen at cases and bid up prices, all sorts of things. But when you're talking about saving $5,000 for using a strategy, that's $5,000 after tax. So you think about it. Okay, you're making $120,000 a year. Well, you're in a 43% tax bracket. You have to make $9,000 to come up to save that extra 5 grand. That 5,000 is an an awful lot of money that can make a difference in your total retirement plan. And you can use that strategy even further and say, well, let's take that 5,000 savings and what do we do with that now? RSPs, kids education, what have you. There's so many things you can do with that 5,000.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking $5,000. You can almost, when you're talking RESPs, which you could max two kids RESPs for that, right?
Exactly. So, and 20% savings there, $1,000 grant money, and then help fund for their kids going to school. You know, all these things that, they all really add up. And not to say 5,000 isn't a lot, but you start compounding it and using government grant money and, you know, what you can do with that. Yeah, if you just waste it on different things, so be it. But there's so many things you can do. And this is where having a financial planner to kind of give you some strategy and a schematic of your financial plan in front of you can make a world of difference.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Going to take a quick break here. We're coming back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning our financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. The big question, to RSP or not?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You go back in history and there'd be ads in the news and TV, radio, newspapers all over, and all RSP ads this time of year. And you're not seeing that this year, or actually for that matter, the last few years. And really, why would you ignore an RSP? Well, you know what? There's both sides to this. I'm actually going to go on both. Should you get an RSP or shouldn't you? And there's a lot to consider. First of all, let's do what an RSP. What is an RSP? It's really a tax deferral vehicle. You save tax now, you pay tax later. That's it. It's pretty simple. You know, and I know we get caught up in the name, Registered Retirement Savings Plan. So everybody thinks, well, it's just for our retirement. Yes, it could be for that. And so it does save tax at your tax bracket. So whatever income you're at, you save tax at that. So if you make, say, between 100 and 150, for argument's sake, you're likely in about a 43% tax bracket. You put $10,000 into an RSP, you save $4,300, okay? Very straightforward. But of course, when you pull the money out of the RSP, it's then added to your income, and it could be added to your tax bracket at that time. That is really what it is in a nutshell. But it makes a lot of sense. And nice thing is both any gains on your investments are sheltered. So you don't have to pay tax on an annual basis. Great from a deferral. So if you're young, you can put money into these and you're investing those funds and then you do not pay tax on any of the growth until you start to pull the funds out. And likely the idea on paper is you might be in a lower tax bracket. Of course, that's if you're not working with the Fox team, right, Mitch?
Exactly.
We love people to make a lot of money while they're working and have a fantastic retirement and then still be in a high tax bracket later and have that worry. Oh boy, I'm in a high tax bracket at retirement. Boo hoo.
Okay, it's a good complaint to have, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a tough one. And that is actually a great problem to have, but we'll worry about that down the road. Now, the other side with RSPs, if you don't use them, you don't lose them. Meaning your RSP contribution room just doesn't disappear. It carries forward. It's a great thing. So you can save it for the time it makes more sense. And this is where tax bracket management comes into play. We look at this all the time. We say, well, you're only making 50. Now you're on you're projected to make 100 in 4 years. Let's save that RSP room until then and use those investments in a different way. So yes, it's part of the strategy and it's part of our discussion. It used to be simply blind. You simply go put money into it and you save tax. Okay. That's basically what most people did. They didn't actually go through the ramifications of what about paying tax later. So yes, Mitch.
I do find that the RSP, like especially for novice to beginner investors, is kind of the first account that anyone mentions. It really isn't the TFSA. It definitely is not the first home savings account because it's so new. And a lot of them are saving it when they're just starting at 30 to 40,000, maybe 45. And they're not really necessarily taking advantage of that big impact of having the tax bracket management that you're talking about. And now that a lot of these people that I'm referring to are typically in the first home savings account bracket, now they can actually utilize that because it's basically free RSP room.
Mm-hmm.
So I do find that it's the first account people think of is the RSP. And speaking with us, we usually recommend the other ones because they are beginning and they have that low salary to start.
Yeah, for a younger person out of university, first job, years in, absolutely. There's a lot of advantage of the first-time home buyer savings account, which again was just new in 23. So now we're looking at 24, and yeah, there's a lot of advantages. That's actually one of the competitors of an RSP. Again, a good problem, but and they both do earn compound interest. So like we talked about, any of the growth, you see this compounding effect of money. And as Einstein says, you know, one of the gifts is compounding effect of money. It's absolutely incredible. Now, the opposite also happens, the compounding effect of debt. And we all talk about the compounding effect of savings, but debt works the same way. And if you're not paying your bills, you start to see your debt get out of control. So again, it's a double-edged sword, compounding effect of money. We obviously like to be on the saving side of that. This is actually a huge reason to have RSPs. And this is kind of a throwback from the pension era where most people had pension plans. Your savings are protected against creditors, period. So if you go bankrupt, they cannot go after your RSPs. Your other accounts aren't that way yet. Okay, they may make provisions for the first-time home buyers, the RESPs, the tax-free savings accounts, but I know the RSPs for sure are creditor protected. And the reason is, it's like a pension. You put money into them, and they do not want somebody to not be able to, you know, eat while they're in retirement. So if you were a teacher, for example, a police officer, they could never go after your pension. So they took those same rules and they applied them to RSPs. And that's great. That is one excellent rule. We're not suggesting a lot of people go bankrupt, but at the same time, you just don't know. There's things that go on in life. Life gets in the way, and maybe it's not even your fault, but certain things happen. So at the end of the day, that is a great perk for an RSP. And there is lots of RSP options. You know, it's kind of funny. We go way, way, way back to, again, if you said, Mitch, my day, and people said, what is your RSP paying? And I'm going, okay, well, an RSP is a shell. You can put any investment you want into that shell. You can have, and normally what they were considering back 30 some odd years ago is a GIC. So what is your RSP paying really meant, what is your GIC paying, what interest rate, that you'll put inside an RSP. Now, of course, most people are way more sophisticated than that now, and they're looking, what investments can we have inside the RSP, and what's the best investment strategy? Funny enough, though, we're still getting the question on tax-free savings accounts. What is your tax-free savings account paying? And it's the exact same. You can have any investment you like in there, but we do hear that off an awful lot. And again, kind of the reason is the name, tax-free savings account. There's a lot of people still think it has to go into a savings account. It really should be called a tax-free investment account. So again, lots of options with RSPs. Number six, you can choose self-direct or manage your own investment strategy. Good and bad with this. We've seen a lot of people blow up their RSP, blow up their TFSAs, blow up a lot of things because we're probably not in our DNA is to be good investors because it's kind of like the people in COVID buying houses. It was just this emotional driven, what we do, if we don't get it now, it's going to go up even more next week. We better buy now. And they're bidding up the prices. That happens in the stock markets too. And people all of a sudden, we've seen many different everything from crypto to marijuana stocks to tech boom, Japanese, Asian stocks, you know, and they all have their cycle, but some of them don't ever get back, you know, depending on what you buy. So being a self-directed investor is not as easy as it looks. And so usually people are choosing a money managed product, whether it could be an ETF, an exchange traded fund, which there's no manager, but you're buying the whole market, or you are buying a managed product where you have a fund manager and they're buying and selling stocks. Now, the other good thing is you can withdraw an RSP early to buy a house, and you still have the home buyer savings plan, which is up to $35,000. So it is that tug of war right now between home buyer savings plan, the new one, or the old one. And depending on where you are in the home buying, you know, it might be better on using the old plan, because you may not have enough money under the new plan. So this is something you should speak to your financial planner about. And RSP deductions are deferrable. A lot of people don't know this. If let's say you got an inheritance and you got $100,000, you could put $100,000 into your RSP if you have that much room. So assuming you never made a contribution, you got $100,000 of room, and you put $100,000 in the RSP. Might not be the best thing tax-wise. And let's say you make $130,000 a year. You may actually be best to put just $30,000 into an RSP that year, but you put the whole $100,000 in. Well, you're allowed to, but you don't have to claim it all. You can just claim $30,000 this year and save the other $70,000 for the following year. And then you'll use another $30,000 the following year, another $30,000 the following year. So you can put the whole amount in, but decide the amount you want to claim each year. And the money's still growing while it's sitting there. It's still invested. So this is actually a good way to protect you from yourself. Because quite frankly, if it's in an RSP, you're probably not going to pull it out. But if you put it into a TFSA, for example, or just an investment, you might be tempted to pull those funds out.
Another good thing that we save RSP room for is people with rental properties. They're typically not going to want to keep these rental properties forever. They're tough to manage. And who in their 80s and 90s wants to deal with tenants? So they're dealing with these properties, and many people have bought these at $300,000 to $500,000. They're grown to $1 million, and maybe when they sell them $1.5 million, and then they have these massive capital gains. And instead of saving, if they're making $80,000 to $100,000, we're actually saving their RSP room for when they have those big capital gains of $500,000, because you're going to get a bigger bang for your buck using your RSP room at 53.5% than you are at 30 to 40%. So yeah, that's another thing that we're using RSP room for.
That's a great point. And that could be a cottage. It could be a rental property where there's a big capital gain looming. You can use that RSP room to offset that big capital gain. And now I've done that a number of times with clients with rental properties, as you mentioned. Again, there's still the age deadline of age 71. Or your spouse's age on a spousal RSP of age 71. So you do have to take that into account, but it is part of the overall plan. And again, kind of going with the spousal RSP is, it's one of those ones a lot of people forget about. It's a great way to income split. You can put money into your spouse's RSP. You get the tax deduction. He or she pays the tax on the way out. Now, a lot of people say, well, big deal. We get to income split when we're 65 anyway. Well, what if you retire at 60? This gives you some options. And I've used this a number of times to give the spouse, quite often who isn't working anymore, may have retired early, and give that person an income. And finally, RSPs are sticky. They are sticky. People do never cash in RSPs because they don't want to pay tax on them. So I look at it as an RSP is it's a definitely a good for savings account, and other options aren't so sticky. People get tempted. There's all sorts of things, and it's not even themselves sometimes. It's their kids. The kids say, can I borrow $50,000? Well, if it's in a tax-free savings account, they'll pull it out. But if it's in an RSP, even the kids say, oh yeah, you shouldn't touch that money because you don't want to pay all that tax. It truly is very sticky, and that might be the biggest benefit of all.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are there from Fox Group. Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Going to take a quick break here. We're coming back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning our financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. All right, Family Day weekend coming up, or as it approaches, conversations you should be having with your 20-year-old. Is this going to go? Is this going to end up in a bun fight?
Well, yeah, we're in the big Family Day weekend here, holiday in February. Scott, you have any plans with your family this weekend?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get away from them as far as I can. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. Light up the barbecue.
Well, if you do find some time with them, I've got some topics here. Maybe you guys can go over if you feel like it. And the first one is to consider and possibly rewrite your money story, which is one of the most important things to consider when you start your financial planning is your money mindset. What is your relationship to money? For example, are you a spender, a saver? Do you consider it scarce or abundant? And how does that shape how you treat it? What beliefs about money do you have and do you follow? Many people see money as means of control and also how possibility of doing stuff. Or maybe even if they have an abundance, they may even call it willy-nilly. And these can be shaped from young ages. And when people are in their 20s, that's really when they are going to start earning money. It's the habits that were formed possibly in the last 10 years, maybe from 10 to 20, that were shaped that and might shape their whole mindset and their whole relationship with money. So over this Family Day, it could be something that you want to talk to about your children or even your UC students or graduates about what their relationships with money are. And at the end of the day, you're forming these small habits over time, and these are going to form into unconscious decisions that become your lifestyle. Nothing ever starts big. It starts with something small, maybe putting away $100 a month into your FHSA or your TFSA, or right now I know Don just talked about RSPs, so maybe you're putting into RSPs before the end of February, or maybe even matching your work pension plan. All these things are things that you need to do and stuff that we talk to our clients regularly, and also with our clients' kids. I know I'm meeting with a lot of them, and that's because their parents are doing a great job of getting them in to start these habits young, because they know that starting young is what builds that big habit that are going to last for the rest of their lives. And so the next thing you need to do here is to understand your inflows versus your outflows. So once you understand your feelings about money and how they may help or hurt your finances, you need to start building a solid financial foundation for the future here. So understand how much money you have coming in and ensuring that it's more than how much you're spending. It sounds really simple, but this is something that we go through pretty much every meeting with our clients is what are you spending and what are you spending it on and how much are you bringing in? And we need to make sure that you are spending less than you're bringing in, because that really creates the opportunity of what you can do into putting into different accounts and creating that retirement plan, estate plan, buying a house. All of these goals that are lifetime goals, they don't start with just, they happen in one day. It builds over time. So it does sound simple. We, as financial planners, do simplify complicated things. And sometimes it's tough to really rein in the spending. But if you're looking just at the US right now, they topped $1 trillion last year in total credit card debt. Like that is an absolute ton of credit card debt. And that just means that their outflows are not overcoming their inflows. They're not making as much as they should, right? So
a trillion, that is an awful lot of money. You can't even imagine what a trillion is. So yes, that is that's a lot of credit card debt.
It'd be pretty cool to see $1 trillion in cash just in a safe. And then if you showing a photo to this to like someone and being like, this is all of Americans' debt. That's just crazy.
Yeah, it would be massive. It would fill lots of football stadiums in cash. So that is a lot of debt. And you're right. You know what? Funny enough, credit card companies are doing quite well financially.
Shocking. Absolutely shocking. I'm sure Taylor Swift's on her way to $1 trillion as we say this. So who knows? But I know it can sound tough to really stop buying what you're buying and to put money away, but I mean, if you're really thinking about it, if you can, instead of spending $200 going out for dinner and having drinks or whatever with your friends, I'm sure you can have fun for $100. And the next day, you're going to probably have just as much fun thinking about it. And you can put that $100 towards a TFSA and RSP, and that's really going to grow. So if you were to put away $200 a month for 10 years, so if you started at age 20 and you did $200 a month for 10 years, all the way to age 30, and then you absolutely just stopped completely, which we don't recommend, but for this example, I'm going to just show you the power of doing this, versus starting at age 30 and putting it away for 30 years. So you've put it away for three times more. You've put away $72,000 versus putting away $24,000. At age 60, your $24,000 would be $213,000. And at age 60, that $72,000 would be about $217,000. So you put in three times less and you have roughly the same amount. And that's just how things work. The compound interest is your best friend. I know Don just said this, but it really is. And just starting young, and I know it's family day weekend, so maybe mention it to your university students or any of your young adult children that, hey, you know what? I know you're maybe making some money here and you're having fun, but let's make sure you're putting some away too, so that you can have some money for stuff and maybe not living in their house till you're 40.
That's a good conversation for you to bring up, just usually when they're asking for the car keys or some money, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Or $50,000.
There you go. All right. We are planning our financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. Find out more at donfox.net. Call them at IG Private Wealth Management, 905-972-7420. Quick break. Our last segment coming up.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning our financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. All right, ending the show with reasons not to RSP this season.
Yes, and you know what? This is confusing. I just finished going over reasons why to contribute to an RSP. Now I'm going to go reasons not to. And that's what's hard when you're a consumer and you are simply Googling different things and you're trying to get advice based on people's opinions. Even this was confusing when I read it. So first of all, number one reason, first home buyer savings plan, the FHSA. That is new. It came out last year, as we talked about. And it is really a combination of an RSP contribution on the way in, where you get a tax deduction, and a TFSA on the way out, where you don't have to pay tax at all. And you don't have to repay it, unlike the home buyer savings plan in the past. Fantastic account. We've talked about them before. So, but you do have to qualify. So if you do qualify for this, meaning you haven't owned a home for the previous 4 years or never owned a home at all, yes, this is a good reason not to put money into an RSP. And again, the limit is $8,000. This one here is kind of interesting. If you don't already have an emergency fund or other investments that are liquid, well, I read this, I'm thinking, well, an RSP is actually not a bad emergency fund. If you become unemployed and your income is now dropped, now you can pull money out of your RSP, take funds out at a lower tax bracket. So there is occasions where an RSP is kind of an emergency fund. Not that we like to think of it that way, but it's fantastic unemployment insurance. But on a normal way, you may want to keep some cash around just so you don't go into debt. And that's, you know, everybody's got a different figure. That might be $4,000. It might be $10,000. It depends on your lifestyle. Now, number three, if you make roughly $100,000 or less, you maybe should look at TFSAs or the FHSA. And yes, there is some truth to that. Maybe the TFSA might be better. Maybe saving your RSP room for later would make some sense. And we talked about that earlier in the show. It's always that debate. So there is competing investment products, the TFSA, RSP, and the FHSA. What is the best solution for you? Don't do this by yourselves, folks. This is difficult to figure it out. And you've got to bring out your tax return. You have to look at your potential income. Lots of questions go through. But I would suggest, you know, 100,000 or less, maybe you're in a 30, you're still in a 33% tax bracket. Most people are in a 33% bracket or less later when they retire. So potentially you may not want to make an RSP contribution, but as we talked about earlier, it's saving money for a big tax on a capital gain, then you may want to save the RSP room for that. So there is something to be said about that. So if you're not in a high bracket, 100,000 or less, you may want to consider the other products. Here's one here. If you plan to simply spend the extra money from an RSP, you shouldn't do one. Well, that one I totally disagree with, okay? Because why not put money in RSP and blow? At least you got some money invested, because a lot better than just simply blowing the money and not putting money away. So this is kind of odd. But yes, I think the gist of this was simply, yes, you should maybe think of the RESP for the kids or saving or paying down debt. So there's a lot of better avenues, but at least an RSP is forcing you to save. Number five being you have unpaid debt. Pay down that debt first and then start to save later. Yes and no. I would say more to the no side, depending if it's credit card debt or high interest debt in general. But if you just have a mortgage or a car loan, et cetera, you'll never get any savings put away if you always wait for the time you're out of debt, because most people are very good at paying down debt, but they're not good at saving. So I would, again, if it isn't credit card debt or really, you know, high interest debt, I would still put money into the RSP. I would take the tax savings and apply it to the debt, a refund. If you have kids that qualify for the extra RSP, RESP grants, well, RESPs, as we talked about earlier, great way to throw some extra money into the RSP, RESPs. And yes, you could get an extra $500 a grant room, but it's that combination, looking after your kids' education or retirement. I'd still look at retirement first and RESP second. If we plan to buy a home, then you got to look at, okay, the FHSA, or do you look at the old home buyers? That's still around, as we discussed. So depending on where you are and how close you're going to be, how soon you'll be buying a home, you may still want to look, put money into an RSP, pull it out under the old program. And it's paying down debt in general. But like I said, paying down debt is great. It's a good way to increase your net worth. As I said, compound interest, as we talked about earlier, works both ways. It works as an investment, and it works against for debt. You can go down that slippery slope. But having a strategy, having an actual plan, what should you do? RSPs, TFSAs, RESPs, there's so many acronyms, but what do you do? Paying down debt is one of them. But the whole idea is having an actual financial plan, and that will dictate, should you or shouldn't you RSP this year?
One size doesn't fit all. All right. We have been planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox have been here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.